Time. What is it? Look in any anthology of great thoughts under the word time, and you will learn that just about every wise man in recorded history has made some sage commentary about time. Arthur Brisbane said, "Regret for time wasted can become a power for good in the time that remains. And the time that remains is time enough if we will only stop the waste and the idle, useless regretting." John Howe wrote, "What a folly to dread the thought of throwing away life at once and yet have no regard to throwing it away by parcels and piecemeal." On Queen Elizabeth's deathbed, her last words were, "All my possessions for a moment of time." I like what Benjamin Franklin said best of all. "Dost thou love life? Then do not squander time, for that is the stuff life is made of." Like many other writers in the self-help field, I borrowed from Franklin and Queen Elizabeth in my book, The Greatest Salesman in the World, when in Scroll 5 I wrote, "I will live this day as if it is my last. I have but one life, and life is not but a measurement of time. When I waste one, I destroy the other. If I waste today, I destroy the last page of my life. Therefore, each hour of this day will I cherish, for it can never return. It cannot be banked today to be withdrawn on the morrow, for who can trap the wind? Each minute of this day will I grasp with both hands and fondle with love, for its value is beyond price. What dying man can purchase another breath, though he willingly give all his gold? What price dare I place on the hours ahead? I will make them priceless. I will live this day as if it is my last. Time is the only commodity in the world which is allocated equally to all. Rich man, beggar, white man, black man, president, housewife, salesman, writer, all of us receive the same 24 hours a day. There are no favorites to that ticking clock." Alan Lakin is a bona fide expert in the planning of time. His clients include such corporate giants as American Tell and Tell, Bank of America, IBM, Lever Brothers, and Standard Oil of California. I first saw this bright guy on the Johnny Carson Show soon after his book, How to Get Control of Your Time and Your Life, had been published. I listened and watched with fascination. 10 minutes later, I was convinced that I really didn't know as much about controlling my time as I thought I did. I bought Alan's book. It was tremendous. We began to correspond, and the ultimate result is this magic cassette containing the essence of his techniques. But let me warn you, if you're waiting to hear any far-out, super-sophisticated or complicated techniques to master time, you'll be disappointed. What Alan Lakin shares with you, instead, are some simple, basic, but still little-known methods of controlling your time to get the most out of you. Learn them. And, as Franklin said, you will be controlling far more than your time. You will be controlling your life. And now, here's Don Allen with Alan Lakin's modern classic, How to Get Control of Your Time and Your Life.
How to Get Control of Your Time and Your Life by Alan Lakin. Many people on the way up allow their family and personal lives to be heavily impinged upon by work demands. Others are so achievement-oriented that they feel guilty taking time out for anything that's not in some way related to their work. Horror stories abound of men who work so hard that they hardly ever see their families and who end up with ulcers and heart trouble. One study several years ago of successful and unsuccessful executives indicated that many men who ultimately fail had let their personal lives go by the wayside while keeping up with the rat race. My experience with clients has convinced me that when executives find themselves on a treadmill, they tend to lose perspective on what's important. They spend time unnecessarily on secondary matters and let many important ones go undone. This often tends to be cumulative. The more overtime they put in, the more exhausted and less efficient they become. The answer is not to spend more hours on the project, but to work more effectively within the time allotted, to work smarter rather than harder. I recall one architect who came to me suffering from too much work and not enough play. He had only recently recovered from a bleeding ulcer and again was working 60 hours a week. His complaint was that he never had time to see his wife and young children. I suggested that he take off at noon on Friday and, since summer was just beginning, take his family away to his favorite spot at Lake Tahoe. He rented a cabin where he and his family spent each weekend during the summer. Not surprisingly, he got to know his family again, and his health improved. Since he knew that he couldn't make up for low productivity by long hours, he concentrated on getting the important things done in the time he had. He actually got more done than he ever had working 60 hours, even though he shaved more than 15 hours off that total. As a bonus, he got some of his most creative ideas while he was relaxing at the lake, so his leisure time paid off handsomely. All he really lost by cutting back those 15 hours was the detailed drafting that he compulsively had felt the need to do himself. Can you work effectively if you're too fatigued from excessive hours? Probably not. Maybe a better solution would be to quit early, take the afternoon and evening off, and come back the next day refreshed and physically able to work twice as hard. Get more done by doing nothing. I think you'll find that if you arrange things so that you find time to relax and do nothing, you'll get more done and have more fun doing it. One client, an aerospace engineer, didn't know how to do nothing. Every minute of his leisure time was scheduled with intense activity. He had an outdoor activity schedule in which he switched from skiing and ice hockey to camping and tennis. His girlfriend kept up with him in these activities, although she would have preferred just to sit by the fire and relax once in a while. Like too many people, he felt the need to be doing something all the time. Doing nothing seemed a waste of time. His relaxing by the fire consisted of playing chess, reading Scientific American, or playing bridge. Even his lovemaking was scheduled. For an experiment, I asked him to waste time for just 5 minutes during one of our sessions together. What he ended up doing in those 5 minutes was relaxing, sitting quietly, and daydreaming. When he was finally able to admit that emotional reasons caused him to reject relaxing as a waste of time, he began to look more critically at that assumption. Once he accepted the fact that relaxing was a good use of time, he became less compulsive about being busy and started enjoying each activity more. Previously, he had been so busy doing that he had no time to have fun at anything. He began to do less and have more fun. Sometimes the only way to get more leisure time is to reduce the demands of the job. If you attempt to get more relaxation and don't succeed, you may have to make some basic changes in your work situation. A credit manager for a men's clothing store struggled with overtime for years. He never could get his boss to let him have an assistant for the details. Finally, after 3 years suffering, he decided it was hopeless and found a job with another firm where he didn't have to work 80 hours a week and he had more time to spend with his family. On the other hand, the chief accountant in the same firm solved the same overload problem by deciding to do as much as he could and not worry about what didn't get done. His solution of doing things in order of their importance but only working a regular work week was more successful. When the boss saw that the work wasn't getting done, he let the chief accountant hire more help. Make the most of your transition time. I've suggested that you need to balance work and play. You might say to me, I don't have time for everything. Well, I say, let's see if we can find you some time. More specifically, let's see if you can find some time that you've previously overlooked. One kind of time that's often overlooked is what I call transition time. This kind of time starts when you awaken in the morning and ends when you commute to work. For most people, it amounts to perhaps 40 minutes a day. One man I know has reduced it, though, to only 15 minutes. He uses the time only to do essentials, eat breakfast, shave, dress, and he does these as quickly as possible. There may be an advantage in extending rather than reducing this transition time, though. If your day is broken into many parts, transition time offers you perhaps the only block of time you'll have alone and undisturbed. Why not reflect on the best use of your time during the coming day and consider those time management techniques that will help you get things done? There are other ways to enrich transition time, too. For example, one politician was reported to have listened to Shakespeare plays while shaving. One creative manager, realizing that he got some of his best ideas in the morning, has come to expect them and catches them for further development while they and he are still fresh. How to use commuting time. If you're a professional person, how about working at home twice a week and skipping that 45-minute commute on the expressway? If you drive to work, true, you're limited in the use you can make of the time you spend while sitting in traffic jams, and safety does come first. But you can listen to the news on the radio, practice your new vocabulary exercise, and as more and more cassette tapes on educational subjects are becoming available, you might learn a foreign language, listen to a business report, or take a memory course. Commuting Time offers a chance to preview and plan your day, though you should crystallize that plan on paper as soon as you sit down at your desk. The true price of lunch. In some selling jobs, of course, the customer is crucial, and in such a situation, a working lunch may be beneficial. But by and large, a full-scale lunch is a fantastic waste of time. For most people, lunch just adds calories and expenses they can well do without. Many doctors today are dead set against 3 square meals a day, and many first-rate MD diet specialists either skip lunch altogether or have some cottage cheese and that's it. If you take an early or late lunch, the normal lunchtime offers a good opportunity to get things done while the phones are quiet and others are away. On the other hand, if you have a hectic, busy day, a lunch break may provide the only breathing time for you. In that event, if you cut back on your lunch time, you might decrease your effectiveness the rest of the day. Maybe this is a good time for you to take a walk or a swim at the Y. For example, a general merchandising manager, recently promoted, no longer took a regular lunch hour off. He felt that since his job involved more responsibility, he should be available all the time, and so he just grabbed a quick sandwich on the run. After several weeks of this, he found himself irritable in the afternoon, snapping at his colleagues and having difficulty concentrating on important matters. I convinced him that he needed a sit-down lunch to restore energy and calm. How to use waiting time. If you have to wait for the subway, bus, or your carpool, or in the prospect's office, you can use those patches of time profitably, too. You might read the paper, but suppose you've had a lifelong goal of reading the classics. Most of them are available now in paperback. You may not always feel like reading Don Quixote as you wait for the bus at the corner of Main and Pine, but isn't it nice to have the option? If you're a salesman, you can use waiting time to write up the last order, dictate a follow-up letter, or better prepare yourself for the coming sales talk. Make your sleep work for you. If you like, you can put some sleep time to work once you realize that most bodily functions continue while you are asleep. As your dreams show, your subconscious works even while you're sleeping. Why not deliberately put it to work on your tough problems? Here's how. Pose a question to your subconscious just before you fall asleep. Select one that requires hours of thought. After all, your subconscious will have 4 to 8 hours to work on it. Now, don't waste time thinking about it consciously, but do expect a meaningful answer when you awaken. Many who have tried this method have found it very successful, but if it only keeps you awake, by all means forget it. How to repeal Parkinson's Law. I feel that so long as people do the job they're hired and required to do, they shouldn't have to look busy every minute of the time. I've always tried to give the people who work for me a real incentive to make good use of their time by allowing them to do reading, writing, or whatever else they want after they finish my work. I've even sent them home early with full pay when there was nothing else to be done. The policy of making people sit at their desks, even if they have nothing to do, breeds bad time habits and accounts for a certain amount of psychological aggravation. It isn't surprising that work expands to fill the time allotted for its completion, as C. Northcote Parkinson has stated, since all too often there are no alternatives available. I propose that it's time to repeal Parkinson's Law by allowing people to reap the benefits of getting done early and letting them do their personal things. In limitless jobs, where there are truly an endless number of things that could be done, such as creating advertising copy, researching, selling encyclopedias, removing every speck of dust from the house, Parkinson's Law theoretically doesn't apply. There is always enough work. In practice, certain tasks tend to be done on a particular day, and these are the ones that are stretched out. You really can't push people to be creative by the clock, and beyond a certain point, simply putting in the hours is not necessarily the best way to get creative work done, as the architect I mentioned earlier clearly demonstrates.
Doing more by doing less. In all planning, you make a list and you set priorities. This is extremely important to list and set priorities. However, all the items on the list are not of equal value. Once you've made a list, set priorities based on what is important to you now. Use the ABC priority system. Write a capital letter A to the left of those items on the list that have a high value, a B for those with medium value, and a C for those with low value. To a certain extent, you'll have to guess, but that's okay. It's still useful. Once you've done that, you're ready to look for tasks which are better left undone. How often have you resorted to poking through routine work to get a feeling of satisfaction because you're doing the processing efficiently, while you let more important activities go because you want to avoid the feeling of doing them inefficiently? For example, neatening the desk. You would be unlikely to label this as an A activity unless it's become a disaster area, but because it's such an easy thing to do and the results show immediately, you might very well spend an extra few minutes unnecessarily neatening your desk, when perhaps the thing to do is to get away from your desk and go on and see what you can do with a personnel problem that needs solving down in Department 73. Why do people have this strong tendency to get bogged down with C's? One reason is that many activities of top value cannot, by their very nature, be performed well. Part of their value may be that they've never been done before. Examples include setting up a committee to consider manufacturing a new, highly competitive product, diapering a baby for the first time, learning Chinese, switching to organic cooking, finding something else to do with your evenings besides watching television. Now, there is a certain luxurious feeling that comes from doing whatever you want without regard to priority or time involved. Since you know you're not doing A's, you can waste time and gain the feeling of doing something well, starting something easy and finishing it, crossing an item off your list and moving the paper from your inbox to your outbox. But don't kid yourself. It's because you're doing all these C's, not because you haven't any time, that you don't get to do your A's. The 80-20 rule. When I deal with people who claim they are overwhelmed, one of the best ways I can help them is to have them become more comfortable with not doing C's. But people are often hesitant to let go of C's. Therefore, I suggest to you the 80-20 rule, which says if all items are arranged in order of value, 80% of the value would come from only the top 20% of the items, while the remaining 20% of the value would come from the remaining 80% of the items. Sometimes it's a little more, sometimes a little less, but the vast majority of the time I think you'll find the 80-20 rule is correct. What this suggests is that in a list of 10 items, doing two of them will yield you most 80% of the value. Find these two, label them A, and get them done. Leave most of the other eight undone because the value you'll get from them will be much less than that of the two highest value items. Instead, use your time to find more top priority A items and give that additional time. A real estate salesman came to me for advice about increasing his sales and profits. We looked over his card file of his properties for sale in his prospect list and discovered that unquestionably, 80% of his sales were coming from 20% or less of his customers. The 80% of his time that was going into low-dollar properties contributed little to his cause. In fact, they wore him out. As, being low-priced, he had to show them more often, and this took time away from the more expensive and profitable properties. By the end of our talk, the salesman realized that his time was best spent with the cream of the crop. The real payoff for his selectivity came by tripling his earnings in the ensuing 12 months. When not to do C's. One of the best ways to find time for your A's is by reducing the number of C's that you feel compelled to spend time on. The main question with the C's is, can I not do this C? Think of the great feeling of satisfaction of drawing a line through a C item on your to-do list without ever having to go through the effort of doing it. Rather than think, I have to do this C, get into the habit of thinking, maybe I don't have to do this C. Let's say your to-do list contains get the car washed. You have given this C priority, but are tempted to have a half hour out and get it washed anyway, just to get it off your mind and off the list. It's much easier to get it off your list and forget about it by deciding it doesn't need to be done at all. This will give you an extra half hour of selling time a day, and that's high priority time. In the ABC priority system, there's something called a Z. A Z is something that doesn't have to get done at all, and many C's can be turned into what I call CZs. CZs are C's that can be deferred indefinitely without harm. Definite CZs include rearranging a pile of magazines, mopping the kitchen floor just before the children come home on a rainy day, checking for the morning mail when your secretary always brings it in immediately upon arrival. Some C's need to be deliberately deferred to test whether they can become CZs. Let them age for a while and see if they die a natural death. Give the ABCs their place, rather than let the high-quality A's get buried by the much larger quantity of C's. Try reserving a special place on top of your desk for the A items. Create a special C drawer where the unimportant items can get dumped safely out of the way. If you already have a C drawer, get yourself a bigger one or a whole cabinet for the C's. Now, as a start, try physically separating your paperwork into small A piles and B piles and a much larger C pile. Resort the B pile into either the A or C group, and then put the A's in the A place and the C's in the C drawer. Sometimes it pays to slow down. What can you do when you have no doubt that you should do the unpleasant A task, yet are strongly inclined to run away from it and turn to something else? First, you must recognize clearly when you have reached such a decision time, and that you're at the point now of choosing whether to do your A1 priority now or to avoid it. Once you recognize this decision time, you'll want to take control of the decision-making process. The way to do this is to slow down the final decision. A quick decision to put the unpleasant A1 out of sight and mind gives you little chance to curb your tendency to procrastinate. Take enough time to consider the situation carefully. Give yourself every opportunity not to ditch the A1 for some activity of lesser value. Slow down the process so that you have the time to make a conscious and deliberate favorable choice. When perfectionism helps and when it doesn't. Perfectionism is worth approaching when 80% of the value comes from the last 20% of the effort. For example, the construction of a dam, bringing home the family's favorite groceries, unstopping a plugged-up sink, remembering your wedding anniversary every year. Perfectionism is a waste of time on such labors as rewriting your address book every 2 months when there are not many changes, or rechecking a low-priority letter for typing errors when it's already been checked by the typist. Once you get immersed in such activities, they seem to acquire a momentum of their own. You may then be carried along without control, drifting aimlessly and helplessly with the tide. One way to combat this drift is to set yourself control points for reviewing your progress. Check every 15 minutes or half hour, or go on until 3:30 and then review. One way to remember to do this is to use a timer. If you're not benefiting from continued effort, stop and change and do something else. Do you suspect diminishing returns? Are you being needlessly perfectionistic? If you're not sure whether it's worth finishing something or worth continuing, I suggest that you stop. If you don't come back to it, then in fact you were done. You can procrastinate positively. Perhaps you've been trying to get started on a project but find yourself continually procrastinating. Okay, if you have to procrastinate, I'm going to show you how to do it positively. Sit in a chair and do nothing. That's right, nothing. Don't read a book, don't shuffle papers, don't watch TV, just sit completely still. If you sit doing nothing for 15 or 20 minutes, now don't cheat, you must do absolutely nothing, you should become very uneasy. That A1 priority is staring you right in the face and you're doing nothing. Precious minutes that you could use to accomplish a lifetime goal are slipping by, and you're sitting in a chair, doing nothing. Whenever I find myself procrastinating, this is the technique I use. Believe me, after 10 minutes at the most, I'm off and running on my A1. What is your A1? What is the best use of your time today? Decide. Don't procrastinate, and do it now.